Hello and welcome to another episode of Fantasy Book of the Month. I'm one of your hosts, Dan Evanson. I'm joined this week by my good friends, Katie.
That's me.
And Rachel.
Hello.
And this week we are talking about a classic book. In the genre of classics, we've chosen one. And it's The Neverending Story by Michael Ende. Is it just
Ende? Ende? Probably, because it's
E-N-D-E.
He's German. Right?
It's German, so they have extra E's and things. Sure.
Yes, The Neverending Story by the last guy, or by the guy with the last name of Ende.
You know what? I can't believe I never got that before.
You never caught that?
No, that was fresh on me. That's pretty great, actually. Sorry. Okay. All right. Rachel, any comments on that?
Nope, because I didn't really catch it because I'm smart. But before we get into the book, do we want to decide what the hell classic means? What is classic?
Oh boy, that was really hard to describe because I chose some books. I threw some books out there for this one that I thought were classic and I was shot down hard. So it's on you guys because I never figured it out. Although I think I suggested this one also.
You did.
I did do that.
I think was it a Tad Williams? I don't even know if Tad Williams is classic. He's just everywhere.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I guess like books that are just sort of everyone gets exposed to. If you get into a particular genre, somebody's like, "Hey, you gotta read these." And that's sort of what we picked for classics, I think.
Yeah, the thing is, I never read the things people tell me that I have to read because most of
the time I rarely do either. Because
that's because y'all are hipsters.
Well,
let's
except,
be real.
Except I was my example was going to be Malazan, which is I tried to read.
I would not consider that a classic. Isn't that like not that old? I don't know. Classic to me would be like
pre-90s
classical music.
Yeah. Yes, it needs to be from the 1800s or earlier.
This was not from the 1800s.
It felt like it at times.
It sure did.
Yeah. Actually, this book and I are more or less the same age. It's only a few months younger than me.
Well, you're a classic, Dan.
Oh, I was not fishing for that, but thanks. I was. Well, we're going to try to keep it short because I don't think too many of us had a good time with this book. That's the prevailing opinion, I think, at this point. But so I don't want to spend an hour hammering this book that some people think is classic.
Well, I was just going to say classic is a vibe. There's a classical feel where it's that old adventure story. I think that if we could agree on that.
Yeah, for sure. Where there's not really much character development. It's mostly just like, oh, look, we're going on an adventure.
Yeah. But you can have, like, Wheel of Time, which is, like, a very classic fantasy. Even though it wasn't written in classical times, it has a very Tolkien-esque feel.
That is very true. I mean, we already beat Wheel of Time over the head a couple times. Like, saying that, yes, he kind of deliberately wrote it in that kind of feel.
The style. So you're saying the style is like a classical style.
Yeah, because I would argue it's still modern storytelling, but it's not the new style with super unique worlds, which I tend to like, versus let's have a generic plot.
So. Yeah. In that, based on that, then, would Aragorn be, like, a classic vibe?
I would say it goes off of the trope of the boy and his dragon.
Yeah, that and farm boy leaves the farm.
Yeah.
The chosen one. Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
I just read the new Aragorn book. It was fun.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All those books are fun. I have fond memories. I still have Aragon sitting on my shelf over here. All right. Well, I won't let you. I won't let you derail us, Rachel. We have to talk about this book.
I don't wanna.
So is this both of your guys' first times reading this book?
Yes, yes. I also haven't watched the movie.
I've seen parts of the movie.
I've seen the movie many, many times.
So is that why you enjoyed this book more than us, do you think?
No, I don't think so. Okay. Because the movie ends where this book is like halfway, at its halfway point.
Yes, I was very surprised.
I've never read the book before. So yeah, this was also my first experience.
Yeah, I've seen the end of the Neverending Story movie where he, you know, a little dipshit is riding the luck dog. But then when we got to that part in the book and I still had like hours left of the audiobook and I'm like, what are we even going to do now? I just had no idea what was going to happen next, like what could happen next.
Who knew there was a whole other essentially second novel stitched onto the back of this story that I thought I knew what it was.
Yeah, because then what's his name? Buttercup Bastion. Balthazar Beetlejuice.
Bastion Balthazar Books.
I was close.
He's a triple B. He's a Marvel character, if ever there was one. Yeah.
Triple B, then halfway through, he becomes like an actual Mary Sue. And he annoys
strange turn.
Fucking shit of me. Oh my god, I could not stand him. I like tolerated him in the first half because I'm like, all right, I kind of know what's going on here because I've seen parts of the movie. But then all of a sudden he's all like, now I can talk to this magical lion thing and I can make stories come to life and be true. And I'm just like, what the fuck are you doing? And he ruins literally everything.
He does. He goes on a journey of being the worst. Yes. Which we eventually find out is the fate of all people that go to Fantastica.
Yeah.
So I guess let's run through the plot really quick, which probably most people
thought
know.
I did.
But yeah. I mean, for the most part, you know, the story is this kid, Bastion, he's bullied at school. He is being chased by bullies. He hides in a bookshop and comes across a book called The Neverending Story. He steals that book and then runs away from home, essentially. Yeah, don't steal books.
Don't skip school, kids.
Nope, stay in school. Do your homework. And then he hides out reading The Neverending Story until he finds out he's a part of the story. And then he... Actually, so we leave everything I knew about The Neverending Story and go into the world of Fantastica, which in the movie is called Fantasia. And Bastion both creates and explores Fantastica as he goes on. But every time he does so, he loses memories of his old life until he's all out of memories. And him and his green-skinned friend Atreyu have to... Go to the end of the world or something to get back home. And then he does, and it's a happy ending. Because it's a book for kids.
I loved how Atreyu was like getting so sick of Bastion's shit. I was too.
Yeah,
I was too.
There was a lot in the second half of this book because it's clear that like what's happening to Bastion is like everyone's sort of aware of it, and they're either one, profiting off of him, which are I suppose the bad guys of the book, or they're his friends who are like, hey, you got to stop, you're on magic drugs essentially, and they're literally burning out your brain cells, you got to stop, because if you don't, you go to the city of idiots essentially and a monkey takes charge of your life. There were bits in the book that the, I mean, the back half felt a lot more like a Narnia book, I guess, than the first half did, even though the first half is almost like more like fantastical at least there was like a story, a plot being driven by the main characters more than the back half, which is just, I guess, a morality play of some sort about how humans, as they go on and grow up and forget their childhoods, they become the worst and try to be king. Everyone wants to be the king. I guess that was the moral of the story.
Weird story.
Sure. Yeah.
Well,
thanks for listening to this episode. No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, at what point did the book lose you guys, I guess? Like, right from the beginning? Like, did you enjoy the first half at all?
Yeah, pretty much. Because when Atreyu, like, when we get introduced to him and he's sent on his quest, I have a note that it says, "What a shitty quest. He's not supposed to do anything, just observe." And that's true, because he, like, didn't even do anything, really. Yeah. He kind of just, like, walked around and things happened around him and it happened to be the good things. And I don't know. It just... Maybe I'm not the target audience, being, you know, a grumpy old person who has lost half their childhood memories and wants to be king now. But... I don't know. It just... No.
I mean, it seemed like the closest thing I can relate it to is, like, if you were reading this to a very young child, it hits enough points to maybe be interesting to them, because they're not looking for, like, a continual narrative, right? They're looking to just be entertained to some extent, right? I mean, that's what it felt like, was that, like, and intentionally that too, right? You know, like, details are left out. Things are very glossy and foggy when they're described.
It did make a lot of sense for it to be like that, especially since the main character is like a 12-ish year old kid going on this adventure, and so he's not gonna really be paying attention to one specific thing. He's gonna be jumping from, you know, the sandy dark desert thing to a tournament of sorts to this other thing where he, like, gets a witch slave thing.
It had elements of a child essentially creating a story as they went along, but with, like, the sort of chaotic nature of that, of just introducing elements all of a sudden, and then they are both suddenly there and have also been there the whole time, kind of aspects to it. But yeah, I mean, it was, and at the same time, you know, like, the main character had become, was constantly becoming worse as he loses more memories, and went from, like, oh, this is a sort of interesting tale of a kid who's, like, making his own imaginary world, but as he goes on, he ruins it. I don't know. It felt like it had a lot of mixed messages going on, especially when, you know, when you get all the way to the end and, like, the real victory of the book was the friends we made along the way. Love is real, and everybody love each other. That's what we're doing here. Also, a dragon.
Yes.
Let me hit you guys with this, which is, I feel like if I had read this as a kid, I probably would have enjoyed it a lot. Like, in the time period where I was reading Narnia, which, like, probably would have been somewhere between, like, 8 and 10, something like that. I probably, like, if you had handed me this after I'd just read some Narnia book, like, The Silver Chair, I think is my favorite Narnia book, like, I probably would have dug this. This probably would have been okay for me. But What do you guys think about that concept?
Yeah, I mean, had I read when being the target age, then yeah, I probably would have liked it a little more. Still would have probably been confused by having a witch slave, but you know what? To each their own, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, you probably would have been excited to have your own witch slave.
Let's not be excited about that.
No? Okay.
No.
Probably smart.
Dang.
I mean, it's still, I mean, sure, she did in the end kind of like fuck him over. She wanted become his slave.
I think she just profited off of his continual decline, I suppose. I mean, she doesn't like that. Nothing ever happens to her. She just sort of like fucks off into the background at some point. After her djinn friend is killed in the war for the tower. Like, you guys remember that?
That's a thing that happened.
Yeah, it sure did. What fucking kind of name is Moonchild?
It's a bad one. It's a bad name.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
It's funny because that part of the movie where Bastion shouts out the name and he does it like directly into a thunderclap, so it's hard to like understand even what he's saying. I'll tell you what he's not saying, Moonchild.
Ugh, god damn it.
Well,
we should have done Narnia.
One good thing, another. Haven't we done some Narnia before?
Have we?
I don't remember. I don't think we did as a group. I think it might have been an individual one.
Have we?
I mean, I don't know. Yeah, maybe it was when we were doing individual reviews. I feel like I've done some Narnia for the show.
The person but that remembers things doesn't remember it, so maybe okay. I don't think
it must not have happened if Rachel says it didn't happen.
That seems reliable, yeah.
I don't have the most reliable memory, but I have the most reliable memory of this group.
100% true. 100%. So you guys have so Rachel's never seen the movie. Katie, you've seen parts of it. Have you Katie, did you watch the parts with Gamork?
The what?
Gamork, the big wolf?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Because that's... Well... Nope, I don't know anything about that.
You don't know a lot about Gamork? Just wanted to say. It's got a G followed by an M in his name. That was another weird part of this book, was like, nobody was named Charles. Everyone was like, Garashkanu or Garinka Frank. The Grabbledygook.
Garinka Frank. Yeah. Well, there was Princess Aglamar. That's like almost normal.
You think that's a name?
I mean,
there weren't even like German names. I wonder what the names, I assume the names are the same in German versus not in German. That they weren't like, let's just make up some the Schlamoofs. What did the is that German for something? Schlamoof? Winged insane clown creatures?
Sounds about right. Oh, what were those? The triple fucks, like Hibern, Hylorn, and Hildegard. I don't know.
Oh, the knights?
Yeah. They had like matching names.
I know what you're talking
names.
About. They had, yeah, they had like kind of old English sounding names that didn't sound totally fucking random. Like the man, I thought that I'd never forget the name of that rock cruncher guy at the beginning because it was like, it just stood out like a big old thumb where everyone else's names are sort of known. And then that guy was like, rock, 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 rock.
Oh my gosh, I could just... Oh my gosh. This book was terrible.
Anyway,
I know people who love it. It's just, I read it. I did not read it at the correct time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I feel like there have been times in my life where I would have fallen in love with this book that was not this time.
Did the horse talk in the movie?
I thought the horse just...
No, absolutely not. The movie... Okay, so there are two key scenes of the movie that make that movie timeless and unforgettable, which is Artax dies in the swamp, and Artax the horse... Dying in the swamp is maybe the most traumatic thing a movie has ever done to me. And the reason for that is, number one, the actor who plays Atreyu... Like, the horse doesn't say anything. The horse is just a horse slowly being drowned in muck. But in that sadness. Kid next to it is so genuine that, like, I remember definitely bawling my eyes out in the theater or at home watching this on video a bunch of times. You know, like, when the horse starts talking, it immediately makes that scene less traumatic in the book because... Atreyu and the horse have like a conversation about why Artax is just, no, I give up. I'm going to drown. Just be okay with it, Atreyu. See you later. And then he sinks into the muck. Like Atreyu is devastated. Like and yet he still goes on. Like in the movie, it's heroic. In the book, that is summed up by literally the narrator going, Atreyu went on. Like, that's all it's described. Like, the book just doesn't capture it the way that the movie does. But I suppose, like, that's probably intentional because you don't want to traumatize. The book at least wasn't trying to traumatize an entire generation of children. But the second scene of the movie that was like maybe the scariest thing I saw between the ages of 8 and 12 was Gmork, who is this horrific wolf monster that's chasing Atreyu through the majority of the movie. And they don't ever, like, they are a bunch of close calls that Atreyu never notices when the wolf almost gets him. And then eventually there's this scene where Atreyu and Gmork come face to face, sort of without realizing who the other is. Just like in the book, except in the book, they just have like a conversation about what happens to them. And then Gmork laughs himself to death and sort of dies. I don't even know how to describe. I mean, he does eventually, like, his dead body essentially has one last. His body was so evil that he bit Atreyu even after he was dead. But in the movie, it is like there's like a horrible fight, like a bloody fight between Atreyu and this animatronic wolf monster that then results in Atreyu murdering, like actually murdering the wolf, and then being like, and then the nothing shows up and casts Atreyu out into the like the void of space. And
I forgot all about the nothing in the second half of the book.
That was the other thing that was so crazy, because like the movie, The Neverending Story, is really more about trying to resist the nothing and overcoming the nothing than it is, I don't know whatever this story is about. In this book, the nothing was nothing. Like he fixes it and it gets solved literally super easily. Like, you know, I guess it probably makes sense because fixing the nothing was the climax of the movie, and in here it's basically the halfway point or the end of the first story and the start of the second. I don't know. I probably helps that I have a lot more positive memories from this movie that I can bring over to this book that you guys just don't have. And I mean, like, it was pretty foundational for me as a kid growing up in the 80s that, you know, like this book or this movie, Ghostbusters, Thundercats, you know, 80s stuff, all very foundational to me. If you know me, people listening that know me, you're like, oh, yeah. Dan's one of those. He's one of those.
You're old.
Oh, Jesus. He's not old. He's classic, remember?
I'm classic, yes. Please, thank you. All right. Well, I mean, I do think there is a lot of very cool, like, world building in this book, but I think that's also the only cool thing about it. It does turn into like a odd Gulliver's Travels kind of escapade in the second half. It just is very strange. I don't know. What did you guys think of the conclusion that Bastian in the end gives up superpowers, basically goes back to being the author could not reference his old self as being fat and cowardly enough times, I think. But he's just like, I'm cool with that at the end. And then he goes back and his dad is cured of grief over his dead mother with one story. And, you know, then that's kind of the end. What do you guys think of that ending, I suppose?
It's very... everything has a tied up ending.
Yeah. I mean, it does for a hot second sort of play with the idea that maybe Bastian got like Rip Van Winkled and, you know, he's concerned that he's been gone for years and years because I guess that's subjectively how long he felt like he spent in Fantastica. But ultimately, he's been gone like one day and his dad is like freaking out. And I guess that's all it took for his dad to not be sad anymore was to be he cured his depression with anxiety over his missing son.
Okay, you know, when you put it that way, it's less heartwarming. But when I got to the ending and his dad was all like happy and relieved to see him, I was like, okay, you know what, this book was terrible, fuck you for making me actually feel things in the end.
It like, did feel I good. I mean, they do present it, yeah, as like, it is very heartwarming, the sort of moments where he's been missing his dad and his mom for like if there wasn't this big, long, huge chunk where he just totally forgets his dad and doesn't care about him at all, and actually like has moments where someone's like, hey, shouldn't you be worried about your dad? And he's like, I don't think I even got one of those. And that, like, if they had been able to tie more closely the kid at the end and the kid at the beginning, it would have been like a much more heartwarming tale. But there are moments where he describes like, oh yeah, this guy's dad actually loves him, even though in the beginning his dad is almost like a robot in terms of like just sort of going through the motions of being alive. And then over the course of 24 hours of trying to find his kid, it kind of makes you wonder that, like, was his dad actually like that, or was it just the, like, that's all the kid could process, I guess, between his own grief and then what was going on. But I'm probably giving the book too much credit even trying to make that sort of assumption.
You never know.
Yeah. Rachel, any thoughts about the end?
No, it just ended.
The never-ending story. What a fucking lie that was.
It did.
But at the same time, it was so true. It was so true while reading it.
Yeah, I will say...
No, go ahead, Rachel.
I was going to say, a small disclaimer, as always, if you're... We don't hate... We might hate this book, but we don't hate you for hating this book. Or liking this book.
That's correct.
We like you for hating it, though.
Any opinion you have, we love you for it.
Except
come,
if you're
come to the Discord and tell us about it.
Except if you're like a Nazi.
No,
we don't like those. Yeah. Tell us how we're wrong in the Discord. I would be actually very interested to hear something from someone who likes this. That sounds so terrible. I'm
sorry.
If
you're some kind of fucking weirdo, get on the Discord and let us know about it.
Or, why you know, did you start sounding like fucking Jimmy Carter?
I don't know. Hey, Hands Across America.
Well, you can also leave us a 5-star review and tell us how much we suck.
That's true. Yeah, we like
both of those things are that. Acceptable.
And
go all team, right. We did it.
Well, we did it. It's a complete episode. We talked about the beginning, middle, and end of this book, which is all the parts of it. So good job, us. I've been one of your hosts, Dan Evanson. You can find my stuff at danielevanson.com. Come and check out The World of Juno. We've got a bunch of anthology of short stories out, perfect for stocking stuffing. Sure, that's probably true.
Christmas is over, dude.
Christmas has been over
for next year, for 2024 Christmas. It's never too early to buy books for Christmas. With me has been Rachel.
Hi, I'm Rachel. You can find me at Argent Rabe. I've been doing the Spiffo 9 Cassidy's version Mel's Takeover, where I read all 10 Spiffo 9 finalists and write a review for them. Go check that out and read more indie authors. Yep.
And Katie has been here. Hello, Katie.
Oh, gosh. It's great to be here, guys. You can check out my bookstore, griffinsroostbt.com, or I can do this myself. You can support me on Libro FM. Just search for my bookstore, and then when you buy things through there, it helps me.
She can also see all the books you buy.
I can, yes.
I'm pretty sure I don't know if you care anymore about the monthly. Rachel has bought so-and-so.
Oh, yeah. I watched you buy Murtaugh.
I didn't buy
Murtaugh. That's not weird.
I didn't buy it there. No.
Oh, I bought it there. Oh, my God. I'm so fucking tired.
You're spying on yourself?
I sure am.
I bought The Girl in the Mountain and The Girl in the Moon.
Yes.
A lot of girls out there. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
it's a Mark Lawrence series, so it's not very, oh yeah, more like, oh God.
Is that a girl in the moon? Oh, she's throwing knives.
It's a moon laser.
Lasers in the moon. Oh yeah. Merry Christmas.
What are we doing next month?
Well, no, we haven't decided. Let's not. We don't
Let's
know.
Let's not
that.
Say that it's ninjas.
Could be ninjas. If it is, it'll be a surprise to us what book it is, because we haven't chosen it yet.
Because it's a ninja and it's going to sneak up on us.
It's not Naruto.
No.
Might be.
No.
It might be Naruto. It might be Naruto. Mm. All right. We did it. Hey, everyone. I don't remember. I gotta say the thing, right? All right, here we go.
Yeah.
I'm gonna do it. Peter's not here. I gotta psych myself up for it. All right. Shit. How does it go?
Until next
does he
time.
Say thanks? Time.
Does he... Keep reading.
Until next time. Do what Katie said. Keep reading.
Holy shit, you guys.